First, though, to Cambodia and the devastating legacy of the Khmer Rouge. The Communist Party of Kampuchea, as the Khmer Rouge was also known, held power for fewer than 4 years in the late 70s. But in that time, it's estimated that up to 2 million Cambodians died. That's just over a fifth of the population. After the radical regime was driven from power, Cambodians began to try to rebuild their shattered lives. But there was little talk, especially in public, about the genocide that had wrenched the country apart. It would take more than a decade before a research organisation was formed to document what had happened. The Documentation Centre of Cambodia is now the largest repository of Khmer Rouge information in the world, and its director, who himself suffered at the hands of the regime, has devoted himself to researching that period in order to help the country heal and move on. Kyle James reports from Phnom Penh.
It's not hard to find people whose lives were torn apart by the Khmer Rouge. In fact, it's almost impossible to find anyone over the age of 35 who wasn't directly affected. Sim Soya is one of them.
I don't know when I'm crying, if I have to talk right now, but my father passed away and my sister died because she doesn't have enough food to eat, so she got sick and died. My brother-in-law also were killed. And I was starved to almost die.
Most adults can recite a litany of relatives who were worked to death, starved, or murdered outright by the ultra-Maoist regime, whose aim was to turn Cambodia into a pure agrarian state. Arn Chorn Pond survived. Most of his family didn't.
My aunt that I saw, my brothers and sisters and niece and uncles, Every Cambodian lost everybody, you know.
In 1979, the Khmer Rouge were driven from power by invading Vietnamese troops. Cambodians returned to their homes and tried to get their lives back on track. But it was a society in shock and under foreign occupation. The subject of genocide was repressed as Cambodians focused on regaining some sense of normality. The coping strategy seemed to be forget.
Well, the book is in 7 languages, as you can see that...
But not everyone thought that was the right way forward. Yok Chong flips through a textbook on the Khmer Rouge era published by the organization he leads, the Documentation Center of Cambodia. For him, Cambodia's refusal to look closely at this part of its past was holding the country back.
I think perhaps that encouraging fear not to express, that would not help country to be more democratic in terms of sharing your opinions, encouraging people not to engage to make a difference. Perhaps also in that sense also encourage violence, because sometimes people got so angry, got frustrated, they went into violence.
51-year-old Yok Chong knows that all too well, saying anger used to be a constant companion. During the Khmer Rouge era, his sister was accused of stealing rice. Soldiers slashed open her stomach, and she died a slow, agonizing death.
Honestly, first I came to this research for revenge. I want revenge.
In the mid-90s, he was at Yale University in the United States and was working with the Cambodia Genocide Project, where the Documentation Center was born. Today, it's the world's largest archive of Khmer Rouge materials, with almost 160,000 pages of documents and thousands of photographs. Its archives include recordings of revolutionary songs that were played to indoctrinate people or sometimes cover up the sounds of death in the killing fields. The center has several goals. It assists the Khmer Rouge Tribunal, where some of the surviving top leaders are currently on trial. It also helps families trace their relatives and organizes exhibitions and talks. Chong is most proud of the center's 78-page textbook and curriculum on Khmer Rouge history. Before 2009, 30 years after the regime fell, the subject was not even taught in all schools. Many young people only found out about it from their parents. Chong had to fight for almost 7 years to get government approval for his textbook.
Not everybody agree what I do, but I think that through openness, sincerity, and honest research, I think that we can help shape up the future of this country.
It's not easy work, Chong admits. like those who work on recording and documenting human rights abuses around the world, be it in Germany, Bosnia, or Rwanda, the work takes its toll.
When I begin to read like letters from father to daughters, from mothers, personal letter written at that time, and captured by the Khmer Rouge Guard, I can make the assumption that they both were killed because the documents show that the people who named in the letter were killed later. It's just so difficult to read a letter, how much people want to live, knowing that they would be executed in the next minutes, and they still write. That's difficult for me.
Yet he sees his work as a mission, something he has to do for his country and his people.
We lost so much to the Khmer Rouge compared to all other regimes that you can imagine in Cambodian history. It's a broken society, so difficult to put all these broken pieces back together. The question can we be united for the future?
Despite the challenges, he says Cambodians are a resilient people. He tells the story of a song. It's called Old Phnom Penh and was written by a survivor in 1979, just after the Khmer Rouge fell. Despite the recent horrors, this Cambodian wrote a love song to the city he could now return to. In the immediate aftermath of genocide, beauty was able to blossom. The song is still played today.
ខ្ញុំភ្នំពេញដួងប្រលឹងជាទីស្នេហា